The following is a presentation of Open for Business, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship's conference for business students and business professionals at the Urbana 06 Missions Convention, held in St. Louis, December 2006. For more information, please visit ofb.intervarsity.org.
Welcome. We have the honor of having a couple great guys with us, David Johnson and Bob Kuhlman. Am I pronouncing that right? Okay, cool. They're with the group Integra Ventures, and they do some really awesome stuff with business development in Eastern and Central Europe. So we have Dave is the a member of the board, and he's a pastor at Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And then we have Bob, who is actually president of the organization. So two of them are going to be sharing with us. And make sure before you leave, they have a ton of great materials up here. So they've got actually... printouts of their whole PowerPoint thing, so you can see that, and they've got CDs and business cards and newsletters and everything, so make sure you get up and get some materials before you take off, and we're going to be finished around 10:15, so there'll be time for questions at the end, and you can always also stay after and talk with them too. So without further ado, here they are.
Good evening. Sorry for the late hour. My name is Bob Kuhlman. I'm president of Integra Ventures USA. We're a marketplace ministry located in Central and Eastern Europe, and our focus of ministry is small and medium-sized businesses. That's our niche. We work in that area of the world. We also do microenterprise development, and we also do market access, corporate social responsibility, and we work with integrating orphans who are 18 and above back into society to get them jobs and move them back into the cultures that they have been shunned from. If anybody asks, my accent is from New York. That's where I'm born and raised. However, Integra Ventures USA is in Wheaton, Illinois, and that's where I reside right now. For all of you who are students, and today in one of the sessions, the question was, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? And I remember that because I'm 53 years old, and I still ask myself, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? But you know what? Getting out of college, and if it's not the mission field and it's business, that's okay. Because God is shaping you to do His work in His timing, not yours. And that's what you have to remember. When I get out of school, I wanted to serve the Lord. He put me in business. And I was a product manager for a European country who introduced new products into the United States in the medical area. And I did that for a number of years. And after that, I got bored, and I decided to start a business. And I did with a partner in advertising rep business. And it was successful. But I still wasn't fulfilled, and I kept praying, Lord, please, show me the way to serve you. And after a few years, we sold that business. And I became a bond jockey, and I worked on Wall Street for 18 years. And for 18 years, every day of my life, I prayed, Lord, please use me for your ministry. All I'm doing is making people wealthy. Okay? Unfortunately, I was very good at making other people wealthy, not so good for myself. Anyway, after 18 years, God did move me into ministry and into an area that I knew real well, business. And working with entrepreneurs and helping them grow their businesses to the next level. What I didn't realize over that path of my career, God used me through all of that as I look back. He shaped me, my ideas, my thoughts, my processes. He used the money that I made for ministry. He gave me the gift of giving. So everything that I made went back to ministry. So we were able to fund a lot of things that would have never been funded. And now I finally have the desires of my heart working in Central and Eastern Europe with people who really need our help. So that's a little bit of my background. I came to Integra just about a year and three quarters ago. We work in Central and Eastern Europe, Russia, Croatia, Hungary, Bulgaria, Slovakia, Romania,
a little bit of Ukraine.
So that's our area of the world. What you have to know about that area of the world is we, as Americans, when the wall came down, felt that capitalism had come in and that the woes of Central and Eastern Europe were over they could make money, they could have their own businesses, and everybody moved on. The reality is the wall came down, but you have 40 years of tyranny. These people don't even know how to write a business plan. Whatever they started from the ground level and can only get to that first step because they don't understand ethics. They don't understand business practices. They don't understand a business plan. They can't make those decisions to make their business grow. So what we do in Integra is we coach, train, teach, mentor, and the last thing we do is give them a loan. Okay? Business's mission is a new catchphrase, but the last thing you want to do is give people money and walk away. So that's a little bit of my background in Integra. I want David just to give a little of his background. David is on my board of directors, and he's located in Massachusetts.
My connection, first of all, thank you all for being here. I know it's late, and we are highly committed to make sure that the next hour is well worth your while. We're going to paint you a vision of what it means to use your business and your business skills, either in this country for purposes overseas or by going overseas yourself with your freshly minted MBA in back pocket. My background is I came out of college, a double major in economics and business. I was going to be a business person. My best friend's dad was extraordinarily well-to-do, and he was committed to putting his son and I into business. And my first job, I was assistant to the managing partner for over a million square feet of real estate in the second largest city in New England. And he also worked in he also owned an architectural firm, and I was a field coordinator in his design build firm. And I thought, that's my life. Maybe I might go on to law school after, because I heard that corporate lawyers make $300 an hour on the phone. I said, that's for me. The Lord had other plans. I wasn't there all that long when one of the buildings that I managed and the architectural firm both contracted with Planned Parenthood of Worcester to build the largest abortion clinic in all of New England. And I was not only supposed to supervise the construction, I was supposed to then manage the building that it was in. I was sent down by the management of the buildings to go and get all those nasty protesters out of there. And instead, I went down and prayed with them. And I said, you know what, Lord, you're telling me something. And that something was, I wanted to figure out what I really believed. And so I was going to do 2 years at seminary. And my dream was to be a good college Sunday school teacher someday. Halfway through seminary, this church called Grace Chapel in Lexington. Some of you may know Paul Borthwick, who was a renowned mission speaker. If you've heard him through Blast Urbana, he was dynamite. Paul was on staff there, and you can't be around Paul without getting a vision for missions. Having been on staff for 13 years with Paul, it started to connect. It started to ignite. I was hired at Grace Chapel to build buildings for them. And I stayed on. They said, oh, by the way, we need somebody to teach a college Sunday school class. And so I was on my way. I built buildings for them, but I also started teaching a college Sunday school class and did that for 13 years. For any of you who are, anybody from the Boston area, go to a Boston school.
That's us.
Yeah. I was there for 13 years, and I found out about this organization called Integra that did missions as business. And they were looking for, as Paul Borthwick told me, they were looking for a Robin Hood, somebody who will take money from the rich and give to this mission organization. And so I signed on for 4 years, and I went over to Eastern Europe, and this ministry just caught my heart. They are, again, when communism fell, when the wall went down, we thought that great. The Cold War, we won it. What happened is whole infrastructures fell down. And now there has to be a reconstruction from the ground up, particularly of economic systems. And if we can have if we could bring our brightest and best and find the brightest and best there and teach them the skills of entrepreneurship and have them be the salt and light in this new emerging marketplace that is happening all over Eastern Europe, then we can really do some major kingdom purposes. That was the vision behind Integra, and that's what's happening. That's why I got involved with them as first a development director. I'm a pastor at heart, and so I was working at a church while doing that. The church has grown to the point where they needed more of me, and they needed a better Robin Hood than I, but I can still stay on the board and support in many, many ways. So that's my background. I'll turn it over.
The nice thing about David is his church is located on Cape Cod, so you can mix business and pleasure when you have to have a board meeting. And that always works. This is just a short presentation on, we all know the fish story, if you give a man a fish. And we just want to make a little animation so you understand a little bit about business's mission is more than just giving somebody a loan. There's a holistic approach to it where you can mix your business and your ministry as one without shoving it down somebody's throat. We are not about shoving our faith down anybody's throat, but actually coming alongside them and sharing who we are by what we do. So when we look at this, we look that if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. If you teach a man how to fish, he'll eat for as long as he can borrow your fishing pole. If you give a man a fishing pole, he will eat until his line breaks and he loses his lures. If you teach a man how to make fishing poles and lures, he will eat for a lifetime. However, if you teach a man how to produce fishing poles and lures, train him how to start and run a small business, provide him with some investment capital to get started, then he can hire some other people who are also poor, make many poles and many lures, sell them to his friends and neighbors as payment for the fish. Then he will eat for a lifetime, his employees and their families will eat for a lifetime, and many people in his community will eat for a lifetime. And that's basically what we're trying to teach when we look at business's mission. And we want to start that, very honestly, from a scriptural point of view, so that our objective is the kingdom goal of the business. My daughter just got married, so that's why that's on there. So while I'm setting this up, David's going to take you through a scriptural setup of Integra.
If you're like me, you need biblical permission to take a great idea and incorporate it as a passion. And so I want to give you biblical permission for getting passionate about business decisions. The first one comes from a story, if you remember in the life of Jesus, he had just healed a man who had been, his friends had brought him and carried him through the roof of a building, brought him before Jesus and he healed. Well, he was leaving there and he gets this call, this man comes up to him, pleads with him, and says, "My daughter," the man's name is Jairus, "my daughter, she is dying. She's only 12 years old and she's dying. Will you please come?" And he's on his way, and so he's fighting his way through the crowd. And he's going from doing one noble thing, and he's going to do a very, healing a little girl. That's a marvelous thing. And suddenly, somebody touches him. Do you remember the story? A woman, she had had a very private affliction. She had been hemorrhaging for 12 years. Within that culture, because it was a bleeding affliction, within the Jewish culture, it meant that she was socially outcast. It meant that she couldn't go to temple. She was considered unclean. There are all sorts of social ramifications for that. And when Jesus, all she wanted to do was get healed. And what does Jesus do? She reaches out and she touches him, but then he stops. Why? She got what she was looking for. She wanted to be healed, and she was instantly healed. Jesus said, "I felt the power go from me." Why do you think Jesus did that? I believe it is because Jesus... Let me ask you a question before we go on. First of all, what is Jesus' highest priority? Number one.
Save us.
Right. Reconcile mankind to the Father. Okay. What is his second highest priority? If you look at his life, what would be called his penultimate priority? I believe it's the restoration of human dignity. I believe that human dignity is infinitely important. He saw that rejection and sickness and hurt and poverty were affronts to human dignity. And because when God made us, made men and women, when he made all of creation, we look at the wonders of creation. If you look at the creation story, he said, "It is good, it is good, it is good, it is good." And he made men and women. He said, "It is very good." There is something very dear. And he even stamps his own image on men and women. And it is so very dear to him. I believe that the second highest priority that Jesus did was the restoration of human dignity. And anything that is an affront to that, Jesus was opposed to.
As a matter of fact, Jesus always went from priority two to priority one. He never leapfrogged that. If somebody was blind, what do you want me to do? I want to see. And he healed. Then he saved. He healed the leper. Then he saved. That is the restoration of human dignity. Is infinitely important to Jesus. When he asked that woman, she had got what she had asked for, but it wasn't enough. Jesus wanted to do more because she would have still been, because it was a private affliction, she would have still been rejected. So he turns around and says, "Who touched me?" And he picks her out of the crowd. She must have been mortified. But it was a holy mortification. Because he wasn't asking her. He wanted the entire community to know that this one has been restored. She could go back to temple. It wasn't something she could tell, "Hey, I'm healed." He wanted to restore her dignity. That's what I see when you give somebody a job, when you allow them to take care of their family. We know stories in Romania. There's a huge orphan population in Eastern Europe. Do you know most of them are economic orphans? It's not mom and dad have died. It's perhaps dad has left and mom can't afford, so they will go to these wretched, and I mean wretched, orphanages and turn their children over because they can't even afford to feed them. You give them a job. And we have heard stories about mothers going back to the orphanages and taking back their children. It is powerful, wonderful, Christ-centered work to be involved in economic development and helping people get jobs to support their families. It's huge. I believe it is the second highest priority of Jesus on the way to his first. It opens the door for the first. Second thing, if it's in the priorities of Jesus, there is a passage, and this is for all you folks. This is going to let me off the hook, because I'm a minister. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, around verse 11, so Ajith hasn't gotten there yet. Please hear Ajith Fernando speak anytime you get to, but as he's going through Ephesians. But Ephesians 4, it says, "He has made some as pastors and teachers and evangelists." Why? "For the equipping of the saints for the work of service." He says that basically, our job as ministers are to cut you guys loose to go out there and do the real ministry. Some of you say, "Well, yeah, my job is to make money and I'll give it to the pastor so the pastor can do the ministry." No! You guys are the ministers. We equip you. What does equipping mean? It comes from the original word that means to set right that which is broken. To set that which right which is broken. We're hoping one of the things that tonight does is set right something that might be broken in you. And that's a perception of, well, I'm either going to be used by God in full-time service or I'm going to go into business. No. You're going to be used of God in business. You're going to be used to bring dignity and to support perhaps others, to take those skills. Some of you may take a freshly minted MBA and go overseas. Some of you may impact your employees that you have here. We're going to tell some of those stories where people, as business people in Eastern Europe, have gone into those companies and started companies, and they have been true ministers of the gospel. The thing that needs to be broken is somehow that disconnect that we have. The word for our organization is called Integra. In Eastern Europe, they call it Integra. And it's by it means integrating the broken pieces of our life into one whole. One whole that we see our business life is our ministry. I'm going to tell you some stories about that.
You can't get away from the fact that business's mission affects the church, the entrepreneur, and the business owner. And let's make no bones about it. You know, business's mission is the new catchword, and everybody is jumping on board to do business's mission. I have a concern with that. When the wall fell in Central and Eastern Europe, every ministry and every cult and every missionary in the world jumped into Central and Eastern Europe. And they pounded these people and they shoved down their throats their doctrine, their perception, and they all blew out of town. You go to Central and Eastern Europe today and you say you're a Christian, they will look at you as if you were the devil himself. They want nothing to do with the Christian community. because the Christian community has burned them royally. And that's the fact. Okay? We have this propensity to want to go in and tell them what they should do, how they should think, and live for a God that we know. Okay? But the way we have done it has been wrong. We have not taken the time to get to know them. We as Americans have to learn to be humble when we are standing on somebody else's soil and understand where they're coming from. And my concern is business's mission. We are going to go running back into these countries and we're going to start all kinds of businesses that within a month, 2 months, 3 months tops, they're going to fail. Because we haven't taken the time to learn about that country and their circumstances. And that takes building of relationship first. So I want to let you know that business's mission is not easy. We're doing it 10 years. We have a good model. We don't have a great model. We are still working very hard to make that model a great model. And as many successes as I can tell you about, I can tell you about just as many failures. And if you think of how many business startups here in the United States fail on a yearly basis, you can only imagine how difficult it is going into these countries and starting a business up. Okay? There's also one other difference. We as business's mission people look at two different things. A missionary is a missionary. He has been given gifts and talents to do what he does best, and that's to share the gospel. 95% of missionaries are not businessmen, and they shouldn't be businessmen. And when they try to be businessmen, they fail horribly at it. I'm not talking about every missionary. So you really have to think about business's mission in a serious perspective and not just the next new bandwagon to jump on and get moving with. We at Integra look at what is really the vision for what we want a business overseas to accomplish. We want them to be profitable. More importantly, and we talked about profit today when the guys were saying about being profitable. More importantly, we want them to be sustainable. We want them to be able to continue to move forward in their businesses. We want mature Christian business leaders. Now let me explain what I'm talking about. In small and medium-sized businesses, we are working with Christian entrepreneurs. Okay? The reason we're working with Christian entrepreneurs in this area of business's mission is because you have to have a foundation to build from. Because the investment that you're going to make is anywhere from $25,000 to $250,000 into their businesses. So you have to make sure that you have a common foundation. Well, the common foundation for all of us are being Christians and mature Christians. So we're looking for mature Christian business leaders. We want them to be salt and light in the marketplace. The first question we ask is, what are your kingdom goals? Not what are your business goals? Everybody's business goals are the same. We want to make a profit to do better things. We are not in the business of helping you buy a house on the Black Sea. Okay? We are in the business of helping you be profitable and be able to use that money in a way that affects your community, your society, okay, your vendors, your employees, and those families. And we know that an economic base is the only thing that will change a culture. A culture changes by the economic base that flows from it. So ultimately, we are trying to change that economic base through being salt and light in that marketplace. We want stewardship that builds an economic base for local ministry. We don't want them coming back here saying, I need another $10,000 for this church. We want them to be able to support their own camps, build their own churches, support their own pastors. Okay? So we're looking for that economic base for their local ministry. We're looking to influence and impact the community, both economically and spiritually. Okay, and we're doing that by good, solid business principles, by ethics, by coming alongside, by sharing, coaching, teaching, mentoring that individual. Okay, so that's our vision
for Integra. Now, what is an SME? Context is critical. There's a difference doing a small business in Serbia versus in China versus in Brazil. The SMEs will look different based on its location, due to the culture, due to the politics, due to natural resources. Okay, today you can go into Romania and you can have accounting practices that say this. 4 hours later, the government comes out and they've just changed all the accounting practices to this. That's a daily living experience of the people in Central and Eastern Europe. Okay? So you really have to know the culture, the politics, the natural resources, what's available, what your market is, and what your marketplace is. Common characteristics, employment, 5 to 100 employees. The reason that SMEs is our niche is because in this particular area of business's mission, we can affect more people than microenterprise development. So we do microenterprise development with women at risk and youth at risk, okay? 95% of those people that we work with are not safe, okay? So we have a whole different track that we work with them. But here, for an SME, you're working with employees, 5 to 100 employees. Investment capital, anywhere from 10 to 250. And again, the complexity. What is their accounting, their human resources, their legal, their banking, okay? Mentoring, education, training, all of these are important when you sit with someone, all right? When we first went over, we had a gentleman that first went over to work with a guy on his business. And he said, okay, we're going to talk about four different aspects, but the first thing we're going to do is we're going to work on your business plan. Now, you can't tell them it's a business plan, because they'll panic. Business plan, they think all of this. So you take the business plan in sections, and you say, okay, we're going to work on your income and balance sheet statements. Okay, and then when we finish this, we're going to go on to the next thing. So he'll sit there for a week, and he'll go over the income and balance sheet statements. He goes home, he says, okay, next week we're going to come out, and we're going to do A. We're going to do B now. Well, he comes back, and the guy says, well, you know, I still have questions over here. Well, it took Bob almost 6 months to get through an entire business plan. Because each time he came back, he kept going back to A, going back to A, going back to A, then starting on B. So it takes time. If you think that you're going to go over and these people are going to open up to you and share what their business is like the first time they meet you, you are surely mistaken. They have to get to know you and feel you and smell you and actually become part of their family before you're ever going to know what their business is doing. And then it takes all of that education to help get them to the point of looking at where their business is going. Why work with MSCs? Again, highest potential for job creation. It develops business expertise in the owner and his key staff. It has the capacity to impact the entire community. Large enough profits to impact local ministry. Promotion of justice, truth, and integrity. Promotion of social inclusion through reconciliation and act of compassion. And ability for Christian owners to influence customers, employees, and suppliers. And that's our goals with why we work with SME and why that's our niche that we work with. Because these are the things that we are looking to go. Here's an example. This is in Russia. This gentleman's background, I can't tell you where he came from. It's a closed country. But he's a refugee from Central Asia. Is now in Russia. He left collected with 4 sacks of potatoes. We gave him a loan after we spent a lot of time with Sergei. We gave him a loan to start his farm, and the loan was that of about $10,000. But before we got there, we coached him, we trained him, we mentored him. We had business people from the U.S. go over with their expertise and not come with the one-shot deal. We have businessmen sometimes that think, I'm going to fly over, I'm going to do my presentation on whatever it may be, I'm going to fly out, and I've done a great thing for ministry. And they have. We're thankful that they've come. But the problem is, you can ask one of the gentlemen maybe a week later, hey, you remember when Joe was in town and he talked about your balance sheet? And he says, oh yeah, that's the guy with the glasses and the dark hair, yeah. Well, was the stuff that he gave you, you know, good for your business? It was okay. Well, have you implemented any of it? Nah, it will never work here. He doesn't understand my business or, you know, the banking system here. So they will never tell you what they're really thinking. They'll stand up, they'll give you a standing ovation, and they never utilize what you've given. What we try and do with businessmen is we want them to go over 3, 4, 5 times. We want them to get involved with our business owners. We want them to become part of their life. We want them to become part of their community, because then they trust. And then they begin to tell you about their business and where they need help. And after we're able to go through all the things to look at, is this a viable business, then we can say, okay, we're going to give you a loan. Now listen to what I'm saying. We're giving you a loan. We're not giving you the money to have the business. I'm a father of 3, all old, all out of college. But I can remember a time when I gave my kids something. And naturally, it wasn't appreciated. It was probably broke and destroyed within a week. Where when they had to buy it, it lasted until the day of their college graduation because they had to buy it. It's the same thing with business. They have to feel it's theirs. And they get their dignity back when they realize that they're doing it themselves. So we're giving them a loan over a certain amount of time, over a certain interest rate. We have loan offices that work with them, come alongside them, help them. So with Sergey, today he has 50 employees on a 10,000 hectare farm. There are no drinking on the farm allowed. He hires former refugees like himself from Central Asia. He right now holds Bible studies on his farm for his workers. He provides housing. He provides work. And he is also helping to build buildings for his Sikh-oriented church. So he is in the process of building a church right on his farm. So this is a success story that didn't happen because somebody went over for a month and decided they were going to give somebody a loan for business. Okay? This happened over 2 or 3 years of developing. Because the whole point is we want it to be sustainable. We want them, and what we do is we stick with them. It's not just a matter of giving a loan. We're still there with business questions. We're still there with what are the next steps. We're still there moving the business plan along. We're still mentoring. We're still coaching. We're still teaching. But we're still the loan officer. Because you know what? Business is still business. You can have grace when somebody can't make a loan payment. But we don't forgive the loan. We're not in the business of forgiving loans. Okay? So there's a method to our madness. You want to take it on the needs and lack of capital?
Let me give you another example. And this is one of my favorite examples of all the projects that we've done. There was a gentleman by the name of Victor, and he wanted to be a church planter. And he lived in a part of the Ukraine where there were no churches. There's a very rural area just north of Romania, and couldn't support himself as a church planter. And so he came to one of our Integra guys and told him his problem, and he said, well, why don't you start a business? And they went through a number of different business plans, and as we get to know that area of the Ukraine, one of the things that they discovered is in this rural community, everybody had a hectare or two of land, and they grew wheat. And they would grind this wheat at the local, formerly state-operated, still basically state-operated, grain mill. And what they were finding is this product at the state grain mill, you would have to come and you would have to wait sometimes 2 and 3 days to get your 5 bags of grain ground into flour. And if you brought 4 bottles of vodka, maybe you could get moved up to the front of the line. And tremendous waste of time. And then the product they were getting is they would bring good wheat and get back poor flour and probably about 60% of what they had brought in. And so we helped them craft a business plan of buying a machine that would grind wheat and into flour, and they started a small grain mill. And so we helped them write a business plan. They lacked capital. We loaned them about $65,000 to do that. Now, the government corruption was the big state-run grain mill. It was corrupt in the way, not that it was treating the small business, but in the way that they were treating the people. Very often in some of these emerging economies, the greatest organized crime syndicate are the small local governments, either the town governments or whatever, and they'll just do it through permitting, or the lack thereof. organized crime. One of the ways that these guys have, as they have become successful in this little grain mill of theirs, one of the ways that they've stood against organized crime, and one of the things that Integra has done is in very country-specific ways, we have created what are called coping with corruption toolkits, where we help these small businesses stand up against things like organized crime. The way that they did it was that they would make it up. You would take a small farmer, would come, and he'd make an appointment. Okay, Tuesday at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 4, we're going to grind your grain, and we're going to give you back all of that, and then you're going to pay us like 8% instead of, it's very much a cashless society, so you're going to pay us with 8% of your flour back to us, and that will be your payment. So you'll have a known schedule, you know what it's costing, we're going to give you the best product available. And they loved it. And one of the things is you have an entire community that sees this business as value added to their lives, and that insulates them from the impact of organized crime. Poor legal system that happens. We could talk about that. It would be too long in this case. Negative view of work as ministry by pastors. Again, very distrusting of the churches, because the churches that did exist were often state-run churches. And so church planting was a very powerful way. But one of the things that they had to do is show this community that they were value-added within that community. By running a successful, ethical, salt-and-light business, not only did they plant one church, they planted three. Lack of access to practical training, that's where we came in. Lack of historical models. One of the things we do need to understand is communism, they were good at one thing. They were good at creating engineers and scientists. Again, they were atheistic because they saw that as a crime, that any belief in God was a crime against ideology. Because they thought that a good communist was going to be a good scientist, and they made great science. They had a very educated population, a very talented population, with no access to capital, and the average 12-year-old with a paper route knew more about free market business system in America than a PhD in Eastern Europe when the wall came down. It was just a learning curve. And that we, with our practical business training, can go in there and help. They have a lack of historical models and an obviously lack of employment. Well, this grain mill was going gangbusters. 1998, what happened, just to give you a little historical context of how Integra is able to help out in these situations. 1998, the ruble tanked. Some of you may remember that. The hryvnia, which is the Ukrainian currency, was tied to the ruble. Internally, there was only about a 20% inflation rate. It sounds terrible here, but there, that's not bad. But to the outside, the hryvnia fell about 300%. These guys came back to Integra. They had been faithfully paying their loan. It was a successful business. As a matter of fact, they had hoped that they were going to make $12,000 a month, the equivalent, once they got up and running. Very shortly after starting, they were over $13,000 a month. But it was done in the hryvnia, and then when the dollarized repayment to the loans, all of our loans are repaid. They are dollarized, repaid. They couldn't do it, and so they came back to Integra and said, every dime that we've got is now going to repay the loan. And they never failed on the loan, but they said, is there any way you can help? So we restructured the loan. As a matter of fact, we restructured in a way and said, you know, you guys are getting paid in wheat or in flour. And so rather than call the note as a standard loan one lender would have done, we restructured it. We did it in such a way that said, why don't you also buy a macaroni making machine and take all of that flour that you're getting in payment and make macaroni, which is the staple of the Ukraine. And so not only what would have been a disaster for the average business, we didn't forgive the loan, we didn't say, okay, you don't have to pay it, we restructured it, they're still paying that off. But we also said, there's in this seeming disaster, because you guys are doing exactly what our model wants you to do, you're being successful, we're going to help you be more successful. And we came alongside them, and instead of calling the note, we helped them start making macaroni. And so the business became even more successful, even though, again, some of the challenges we can't even imagine. We can't even imagine a currency that drops 300% in international markets. We're just not used to that within our American models. happens over there all the time. And so there's got to be that built-in flexibility. And that's part of the Integ model.
Speaking of organized crime, recently I was teaching at the American-Russian University in Moscow, and I was a guest speaker, and I was talking about investment banking, which is my background. And I was talking about the money that passes hands and the trading of stocks and bonds and businesses. And the questions that I got didn't have anything to do with what I did as a profession, but the questions were these. Now think about it. Students your age asking questions like, well, did you have to pay the mafia any money? Weren't you afraid of the mafia? That was the first question. As an American, I just about fell over because of our SEC and all the laws and things that I have to work within, and full disclosure, it just brought me back to, okay, Bob, you are not in, you know, Pennsylvania. You are in Moscow, and they're looking at a system that doesn't work. And the next question was taking bribes? So this is what you deal with, because most people, in order to survive, have to give bribes. So we are trying to help them work out of that type of business style with what we're doing. This is Markham Tyler. He's in Russia. Tyler is a town in Russia. And if you know anything about Russia, right now Russia is the wealthiest city in the world. That's the 12-mile perimeter around the city of Moscow. If you go into the city of Moscow, you will find Rolls Royces and diamonds and Mercedes and furs and every casino in the world. And it's an all-night town, okay? You go 12 miles outside of the city limits. The average age of the Russian male is now 57 years old. Alcoholism in the male population is over 67%. An abortion happens every 4 seconds. A woman is beaten to death every 6 seconds. Welcome to Russia. Some things have changed, and some things are still the same. So when we look at those areas of the world, we can still realize how much they need what we have to offer. His story, Mark's story, is he started selling flowers out on a local side highway. And he actually made a killing selling flowers from just a roadside stand. Over in Central and Eastern Europe, flowers are a big thing. And to get flowers for any day is just probably the best gift that you could give anybody. And it's pretty inexpensive. Anyway, he built up quite a bit of money selling flowers. And so then what he started to do, he started a business, a little bit of a business, driving cars in by order from the West. He'd go into Germany, somebody give him an order, they would like a certain kind of car. He'd go into Germany, pick up a Mercedes that's been hit in a accident, pays for it, brings it in, would do the body repair, and sell the car, and he would make the profit. So he wanted to set up an auto parts store. We gave him the loan to set that up, and his premise as far as Kingdom Business was actually what we might consider small, but huge in Russia. And that was just keeping his promises. When he told you that he would fix your car and it would be done on Tuesday, your car was fixed and it was ready for you on Tuesday. And to us that may be very small, but in this type of society, where lying, cheating, etc. is the norm, this is huge. So he started his business, and the mafia didn't really like it. And his challenges were he had to get signed off by 20 different bureaucrats to even start his business. This is his store down here. So he had to sign off by 20 different bureaucrats. That took almost a year and a half before he could even start to think about buying a store. A year and a half just to get your signed documents. Okay. He fended off repeated mafia attempts to take over his business once he started it because they wanted a piece of his business, and he refused. And it caused him smashed glass, tires were ripped apart, I can go on and on, threats to his family, etc. But he stuck to his guns. Twice he fired all of his workers to stop them from drinking. Imagine having your whole employees come to work drunk. Not one set of employees, you get rid of them, another set comes in, the same thing. So two times he had to change his entire list of employees. Well, during this time, Mark was started to renege on his repayments to us. He owned us a loan, and he started to renege on payments to us. And we wrote a couple letters, and then our executive director out of Moscow went out to visit with Mark. And he was being obstinate about it, but we said, you know, you have an obligation to pay, and we were trying to work through the details. At the same time, the mafia, through the government, paid somebody off to have Mark arrested, unbeknownst to us, nothing to do with us, to have Mark arrested for stealing these cars he was bringing in from the West. So Mark went to jail for 15 months, okay? Our loan was not being paid. And then his father stepped in and started to pay the loan. His father was a Christian as well, started to pay it in the loan. After 15 months in jail, he was released. No charges were ever brought forth. So he sat in jail for 15 months, no charges. But during that time, God really repented his heart. And Mark came out of prison. He sold his business. He paid off his loan to us. And he is now in the process of building his second church with the profits he made from the sale of that business, and has recommitted himself to the business practices and principles of the scripture. So you can see that even circumstances beyond your control affect your business. And that's why this is serious business. It's not for the lame at heart. This is serious business. So that's Mark's story. When we talk about how to get involved in business's mission, there's a lot of different ways to get involved in it, even as you step out of the education world and even into the business world. And that doesn't mean that you automatically have to go with the missions organization or that you have to go in missions at all, but actually through your own business expertise that you will start to develop, you can actually help with ideas, you can actually do consulting, you can actually be part of the management, you can actually invest in these businesses in time. You can help with leadership development, because our entire approach is to help them move up that ladder of success towards the kingdom goals that they desire to do for their business. So there's opportunities all the way along the way. It doesn't mean that you have to be in missions. We're all in missions. The problem with it is we as businessmen, and I know this, for years I sat in a church that I love and said to myself, God, you gave me these gifts and talents, and the only thing I can do is write a check on Sunday morning or maybe teach Sunday school. But those aren't the gifts you gave me. You didn't give me the gift of teaching, though I taught. Okay? But you didn't utilize, how can I utilize my gifts? And now when I go around the country and I go to companies and I talk to business owners and I tell them they have an opportunity to use the God-given gifts that the Lord has given them, it's like I just presented them with $1 million. They feel like they just won the lottery, because they finally have an opportunity to use the gifts that have been given to them. So you, all of you, can be involved in some way or another. This gentleman, businessman Bill Godfrey, visited twice a year and then gave birth to ICE, Integra and Irkutsk is what we call it. It's on the other side of Russia. But first he visited. He visited twice a year for a couple of years. And he got to know the people there. And he developed Integra on that side of Russia. And is now a network of business clubs. They have 6 businesses financed. There's a tourist and apartment business owned by ICE. They have a band that has traveled all over the United States giving concerts that have raised money to build their church. And they've done 3 tours now in the U.S., very successful, and have actually just finished their first church building. So first he gave his heart. The second time he gave his heart. Third time he gave his funds. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for people to give their hearts. Because you know what? When you give your heart, your treasure follows that, and your money follows that. So we really look, and this was something he said, love mixed with truth and applied regularly can change the world. And we truly believe that, and we are very committed to just that. Another gentleman, Vili.
Vili,
this is Vili Husak.
Vili Husak is a friend of mine, and met him in Timișoara, Romania. Timișoara, Romania is the birthplace of the Romanian Revolution, where they overthrew Nicolae Ceaușescu, who, if he had a larger platform, would have been up there with Stalin and Hitler, as far as just nasty guys. That in the hometown of Timișoara, Vili and his brothers ran a small construction company, and they were struggling in this emerging economy. But Vili discovered something. His mother made some of the greatest pastries ever. And so Vili said, "Mom, can I try to market some of your pastries?" And there was a couple of little grocery stores around, and they started, and they were marvelous. And I've had them. I've probably eaten too many of them. And they're fabulous. Well, he came to Integra, and we helped him write a business plan of what if you bought a building and really started a bakery? And there was huge unemployment in his town, particularly amongst women. And one of the problems in Eastern Europe is that if you were a woman and you reached the ripe old age of 30, you were considered too old to retrain. Well, Vili started a bakery, and he started hiring people. And right now there are close to 200 women baking Vili's cookies and cakes and pastries and cannolis, and they're selling them all over Timișoara and the surrounding areas. And it started with a $30,000 Integra loan, and not only that, but this man is actively involved in his church. This guy is salt and light in his community. And I'll tell you, the governmental leaders in Timișoara, if Vili asks for something, they're going to respond to it. Why? Because they've seen that this guy is salt and light. And it started with a simple idea of a guy with an entrepreneurial spirit, a heart for God, some real character, who was given a little bit of training and a little bit of access to capital. And he's in the process of changing his town.
He just recently got a contract countrywide to service all of the large grocery stores in the country of Romania. So we're very excited for him. What this all comes back to, from beginning to end, is back to the vision. The vision is, once we make these companies and these business owners profitable and sustainable, mature Christian business leaders, they're salt and light in the marketplace. They're stewardship that builds an economic base for local ministry, and they influence and impact the community both economically and spiritually. So we're right back to fulfilling the vision when they work. Now, I could do a whole other seminar on all the businesses that have not worked. So understand that we're giving you the upside with a little bit of the grounding of there is definitely a downside. And the last food for thought is, do your work in such a way as to provide the kind of questions to which the gospel is the only answer. I have two things that I'd like to tell you, and then we'll open up for questions and answers. One is, Ken Eldred is a good friend of mine. He's a business leader, lives in California. He's written a book called God is at Work. It's probably the best book out there on understanding all forms of business's mission. And he does it from a scriptural base as to why businessmen and scripture are actually integrated. And he goes through MEDs, he goes through SMEs, he goes through equity position. It's an excellent, excellent book. So if you have the opportunity, it's an easy read, and it's an excellent book on business's mission. The other thing that'd be good for you is there is a website. A friend of mine, Justin Foreman, is the president of an organization called rightnow.org. Okay, rightnow.org. And that is a website for 20 and 30 something year olds, all of you, who are trying to figure out how you can integrate your business skills in ministry. And you can go to his website, and in fact, I was there last night. Right now, there's 3,314 opportunities to make a difference around the world. And you can find the best one that might suit you. But it's also a blog site. It talks about business's mission. It talks about how to integrate your skills
And I think it would be a really good website to take a look at. So that's rightnow.org. Okay. Does anybody have any questions for us?
Okay, guys. Hold on a second. For questions, we want to get them on the mic. So,
how do you find these Christian businessmen, or how do they find you?
We have offices in each of these different countries, in the, as we said, Bulgaria, Romania, et cetera, et cetera. We advertise through Christian radio, through word of mouth, that we're running business seminars and that we're looking for Christian businessmen. So we get them really through word of mouth and through some advertisement is how they come to us. And then we start the process from there. Yes, back here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very risky ministry, because not only because of the early stage of the business, but also, I mean, you mentioned earlier about the political risk. I mean, some of these countries, you know, the governments are corrupt. I mean, I come from Indonesia. I mean, we deal with these kind of issues on a daily basis.
Yeah.
How do you find even... find investors to? I mean, as a, I would never invest in.
You want to take that? Go ahead.
Just to give you a couple of examples, there was one gentleman, Ivica Horvat, in Zagreb, Croatia. Marvelous man, brilliant businessman. One day he comes in and there's locks on all of his businesses. Why? Because the day before, the government needed to raise funds, so they put what's called a VAT, a value added tax, on his entire inventory. He rented uniforms in Eastern Europe. If you're a mechanic, no matter what you do, you have a uniform, which is usually coveralls. And he found that niche, and he made these things and rented them out. But he had paid taxes on the materials coming in. He paid it and he sold it. His whole inventory, he had to come up with like $80,000, which was all the money in the world, before they would unlock his business and let him continue to do business. I mean, these things happen. Yes, it is corrupt, it is unpredictable, and that's one of the reasons why we don't simply give loans. We give mentoring and we walk alongside these entrepreneurs through the darkest days as well as the, you know, we're telling you the success stories. Some of these success stories, Ivica eventually it became a success story, we walk with him a long time. The grain mill, same thing, we walk with these guys a long time. When you are, you cannot do economic development in Eastern Europe or any part of the world. You can't do it from 10,000 feet. You can't parachute in the money. You got to go there and you got to walk with these guys. And you got to go shoulder to shoulder with them. And they need a kick in the pants and the shoulder to cry on, you know, and it needs a tremendous amount of understanding, because if we think we're going to go in there with a Western model of business, then we're dangerous. What it is we have got to know the challenges that they live in. Again, it goes back to the model of Jesus. When Jesus went in to teach, so often he asked questions. Why do you call me good? Crawled into their presuppositions. He became God incarnate so that we would know he knew our world. And we have got to do business incarnate as ministry.
And the other answer to your question along with that is, when we work with businessmen, okay, one of the first things that we talk to a businessman about is, you understand that there is a great risk that you may not get your money back. And we have been very blessed with the businessmen that we have worked with, that their goal is not an earthly goal, but a heavenly goal. So they are willing to take that risk for the kingdom goal. Now, we have businessmen who won't go to Moscow, okay, understandably. So we work with who we have, and we try and fit the program we have to the investor that we have. So it is very difficult. But all of our investors know up front, there is a good chance you may not get your money back. And we want to be perfectly honest with you. So if you can go in losing that money, then we're all on the same page.
Can we make sure we get these on the mic? So he's got a mic up there.
Oh, okay.
Just a quick question. Two questions, kind of following what you just said. How profitable are you guys? And for those of us who want to get involved in something like what you guys are doing at Internet Ventures, what are some practical things that we can do to get involved in some internships? And if so, are they overseas opportunities or something that we can do here?
Well, it's past my direction. So I would say, first of all, we think of return on investment. Right now, in the whole field of NGOs around the world, there's something called social capital as well, which is basically are we making a change within society? Are we bringing the speaker after Bill Pollard brilliantly said that even corporations in this country are saying, can we do something more than the bottom line? And so I think that's one of the capitals that when you do economic development in other parts of the world, you know. It's a lot more than the money. Now, how do you get involved? This was one way: is you can give money and you can track what happens. Two is because of email, it is a very small planet. You can develop a relationship with an entrepreneur, a business leader overseas, and you can kind of back and forth. And they're a whole lot more faithful in answering emails than we are in this country. But they're just hungry for that sort of knowledge. The other thing I would say is start with, go over there, meet these folks, find a part of the world that you've got a heart for. Let the Lord capture your heart for that, for one part of the world, and then maybe for a city, and then introduce yourself to a business person over there, and crawl into their world for a while, and watch the passion for that person grow. And then you're going to find that you can connect on an area of expertise, and you're going to, one of the things that will be very, very humbling is I've had very successful business people over here from the West who have built brilliant businesses who realize that they don't know if they could have done the same thing there. And to find that, wait a minute, I'm actually the learner. I'm in the presence of greatness when they talk about the guys who have overcome challenges that they haven't even had to face. And so, but it begins with relationship, I would say. And we only love what we know, and you only give to what you love. And so I would say, first, step one, go. Discover, find, meet, build a relationship, and let the Lord take it from there.
You mentioned, I assume that you train these people, and what kinds of training do you do, and usually how long is that?
Our staff is, we've got 90 plus staff, all nationals. We only have 4 expats in our offices overseas. But what we do is we bring businessmen from here that we have built relationships with that will come over and teach certain aspects of the training as far as writing business plans, those types of things. Each of our offices, the staffs have been trained with business skills and knowledge and able to teach the materials, but alongside that, we bring in outside people to give those seminars. And depending on the businesses and how long those seminars, we may give a week seminar, but that businessman may be in touch with that particular business over the next year, back and forth by email, telephone, business overseas. So we try and connect. What we try and do is, it's just not a ministry where we're asking for your checkbook. It's a ministry where we want you involved. And we want you involved in either giving a loan, taking an equity position, helping the loan program with a tax-deductible gift, and using your gifts and your talents. That makes the difference. And what's really worked for us is we're not bringing that big American staff over there. We're using the nationals to teach their brothers and sisters. You know. So in our MED program, you asked a question on MED program, our loan-to-risk ratio is less than 3%. When we work with our SMEs, I would say 70% of them are sustainable. There's still ones that we're working with that will take time because profit is not, as David said, profit is not the sole goal we look at. We're looking at the holistic approach to sharing our lives, the most important thing, and that's the gospel of Christ and being able to move that into the communities around. Any other questions?
Okay. Just referring to the triple bottom line that we've been hearing about, it sounds like you guys are making awesome progress on definitely the spiritual and the social transformational piece. And on the economic piece, it's been a struggle. And so I was just wondering, Like, what interest rates are you charging people for the loans? And what is your, do you have sort of a long-term plan towards sustainability for Integra to be sort of a continuing concern? Or what does that look, what's your return now, and what, I don't know.
Okay. How our ministry works is that we would like Integra to go on for a long period of time. And we're in the process right now, even us, as Integra USA, looking at our business model of how do we continue to grow and how do we continue to fund ourselves. And we do that in various different ways through partners that we have, because partners from a financial perspective can get involved in a number of different ways. They can give a gift to any one of our loan funds in any one of those countries. So let's say you would like to give a $10,000 gift to Romania. You would give a $10,000 gift to Romania. They would then go out and use that money for a loan 3 years at 5%. At the end of 3 years, that $10,000 comes back and it goes to somebody else. So it's a revolving. Your money is constantly being used over and over again. So that's one way that money is given. Another way that we look at it is when we get a business owner who is interested in making a direct loan to a business overseas for a certain amount of ROI, return on investment, over a certain period of time. Okay, so he doesn't want any direct involvement, but he just wants to be able to help a business get started. We naturally would oversee the business for him and his involvement, but his is purely a financial loan. The third way that's given is through an equity position, where an interested businessman would say, I would like to become an equity partner with somebody overseas in one of the businesses. And I'm not so interested in my return, it's long term. I'm interested in helping them build their business and be a silent partner. All of those ways that it's given, there are percentage works, there are percentages, just like management fees, finder's fees, that we use to sustain the work of Integra USA. My job, Integra USA's job, is strictly to serve my partners overseas. So my job is to bring the businessmen and the money overseas. Their job is to invest it and make those businesses work. So my job here in Integra USA is really from a perspective of bringing that business person with that gift to the ministry to serve overseas. As far as interest rates are concerned, it really depends on what the economy is doing in that country. You know, you're looking at an economy where, you know, the interest may be anywhere from 12 to 29%. Well, we would charge 6%. Let's say we'd roughly charge 6%. 6% that we're charging goes to the overhead of the partner agency in that country. So it's Romania, they would get the 6%, and that 6% would really be to take care of their own overhead. Because each of the countries, and we set it up this way from a business plan, each country has to be self-sustainable in their programs on their own. Okay? So they have to go out and write grant proposals. They have to go out and search for money. They have to go out and move the businesses. At the same time, they have to go out and find the businesses to call me and say, we've got some businesses here that we think that we can make a go with. My job then is to find the investor on this side. So our goal is still to raise money here in the U.S. for our overhead operations, and that's the fourth area of giving. That's the silent partner program, where we have people that directly fund our program here for our operations and our board. And I are active in doing that.
I'd like to add one thing.
Hello. I'd like to add one thing too. You know, you talked about the spiritual and the social. I want to expand your thinking on the economic. We think about a successful business's return as, you know, capital return to the shareholders. Well, we would really see that we want our shareholders, in many ways, are the employees of the companies. If we look at this from a broader kingdom purpose, even economically, Vili Husak hires 200 people. 100 of them are single moms. 20 of them go to the orphanage, and they take these 20 moms pull back 42 kids out of the orphanages. So do we feel better because we're sending $20 a month to support orphans? Or do we feel better because we've started one business that is now hired 20 moms that have gone back to that orphanage and said, no kids, we're coming home. See, that I think we are hitting on all three cylinders. We are hitting the spiritual, we are hitting the social, and we are hitting the economic. because economics, but our shareholders, we would say, is a return on investment that is shared with not only those who put in the money and invested, but it's that investment is made so that we can start creating an economic base that has real kingdom purpose to it. And it's just the broader view of what does that economic success really look like.
Okay, guys, we've got three more minutes. We've got two more questions out there. Let's get both the questions out there, and then you guys can do your best in a couple minutes. Any other questions?
I was just particularly interested in how the advice and the tactics that you give to these businessmen to work with the mafia and to because that's really admirable. And then in the cases where they're not successful, and the example where he's put in jail for 15 months, how do you stick to your we're not in the business of forgiving loans, but still having a Christ grace and,
over those 15 months we did have grace. Mm-hmm. Because we knew, first of all, we knew his father, who was a very strong Christian man who was not going to allow his son to renege on that loan. So, and we had grace in that period, knowing that he was in a situation that was not of his own doing. So when we talk about business and repaying loans, there is grace. Grace is not forgiving the loan. Grace is helping to rework the circumstances as it was with the grain mill. So it's not forgiving the loan, but maybe working it in a different way that will still be successful for all involved. And this is a very good question, because we have this, here's a good example. We had a situation in Romania. The woman owed us money. She was in this apartment, and she owed us money. And she didn't want to give the money back. So what she did was, we were going to have her evicted from the apartment. She owed us $65,000. We were going to have her evicted from the apartment. This was in Slovakia. The staff was in an uproar. Because how can we be Christ-like if we're evicting this woman from her apartment? Okay? That's a tough thing to wrestle with. However, we had a loan officer who had come beside her. We had worked out several different options and opportunities that would allow her, through grace and time, to be able to repay. All of those she refused to do. What she did was, we were going to have her evicted, and what she did was she put the apartment in her neighbor's name, okay, so she wouldn't have to pay the money back. And then, as it turned out, we were able to get the money through an attorney, because then we did hire an attorney. But the point was, we knew the woman had the money. She just refused to give it back. And we knew she had the money because we had built the relationship up with her. So we knew that she had the money. So there's a real thin line of where do you step over that line? And it's like everything else. After you go through all of the steps and you give grace and you give options and you show other ways to do it and it's still refused. I know, the one thing I've learned in a long time, I'm a Christian, but I'm tired of being stepped on. Okay? And if we stood our ground on a lot of different values today, we wouldn't be having some of the issues we have today, because we always thought it was best to step aside. And sometimes we have to really go into the marketplace and let them know that we are a strong Christian.
So I think we're actually officially done time-wise, so why don't you bring your question up here and talk to him at the end.
There's a bunch of material up here that you can pick up, DVDs, newsletters, anything you like.
Thank you all very, very, very much.
Yeah, thank you.